shooter. Today, thousands of firearms sit lonely on the gun store shelves, begging for a family to adopt them. Some new, some used, starving and afraid. For only $2.74 a day, you could save one and give it a home. Get out your mason jars and start saving. Give them a home. They need you, and you need them.
It's not about protecting the stupid. It's just, it is what it is.
I don't know if you know this, but I'm a self-identifying llama. And it's because I have a quick temper and I like to spit.
You are not safe, and you are not sacred, and you're both liars.
We're talking about firearms, y'all.
Keep it clean.
I can hide one under there.
One what? I don't want to know.
I look like I got ran over by a paint truck on the way to Sherwin-Williams and then backed over by the short bus.
You know, let's talk about the modern trends in transsexual transitions.
Welcome to the Deer Shooter Podcast. Deer Shooter is brought to you by WyoTech, empowerment through self-reliance, and by Lucid Optics, on target, under budget.
I can't. I mean, thank you for such a beautiful intro.
They need you.
We all need them.
We do. We need lots of them.
And every time I hear that intro, it makes me giggle. And I wasn't even there when they said it. So
none of us. Awesome. None of us were. That was the problem.
Oh my gosh!
So happy Thursday, and we're recording on Monday for Thursday. But I'm going to throw a shout out to Michael Bain. Happy birthday yesterday, Cinco de Mayo.
Atta boy.
Hope he had some margaritas.
Yeah, well, at least 10.
I bet he did. That's why he's not taking your alcohol.
That's probably, you're probably right.
You're not wrong.
So, I'm completely lost right now.
It's been a week.
Come it on, really you has. Know.
It is only Monday.
Save, you got to save the dogs. You have to save the cats. You have to save the firearms. You have to, you know.
We do have to save the firearms. We have to save
we
them.
We have to save the firearms.
From, especially from becoming zombie guns.
Well, I'm conflicted there because I was promised zombies.
I was. This was the worst apocalypse ever.
And I actually was in business in the 2013 when everybody was marketing to the zombie horde.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And zombie guns being a bad thing now really kind of bugs me.
Right? I know. So what fun is that?
It's not meant to be fun. It's a sad thing because they think they're serious.
Right.
Right.
Now, I did. I had a happy Monday today. I got a really unexpected phone call this morning. It was, oh, by the way, you had a Canik show up.
You did?
I did. I had no idea it was coming. Showed up. Checked it out. It is the Medi SF. It's actually the SFT because it's the two-tone.
Okay, nice.
I'm really impressed. And here's the funny thing. I had one of these on the range yesterday when I was teaching a class. So I already kind of knew how this thing was going to run.
Nice. It's a little top heavy for my personal feel, but maybe that'll help in recoil.
It might. And you were saying about, you know, once you load it with ammo, it'd balance it out, but it's optics cut. So now you're slapping something else on the top.
True. Very true.
I'm going to need an optic.
We can figure that out.
You know a guy?
I may know a guy.
You might know a guy.
Yeah.
So, where are we going with this? Like, we have to adopt guns now? Because,
well, the economy's not getting better anytime soon.
It's not. But, you know, think about it. Everyone goes out and they go Starbucks, right? And what is that? On average, probably
$5. $7.
Oh, yeah, that's $7.
Okay. So you take half of your coffee money
a third
every
of it.
Day, and you put it in a mason jar. And at the end of the year, what we figure in there, we threw
that
about
$1,000.
So really nice pistol, decent bolt gun, decent AR, whatever, whatever.
I appreciate the sentiment, but as a member of the firearms industry, we're not that disciplined. We'll see something shiny and spin it on bubble gum and baseball cards or something stupid.
Or you can just make a swear jar, because I know for a fact I'd get a gun in 3 months.
But you're also advocating that I don't get my coffee.
Make it at work.
Ooh.
See, that might be fighting words right there. Right?
I know it wouldn't be for you.
Me, it's for everybody else around me.
But you're married, right? So you put your coffee money in the jar and make her buy you the coffee.
I wish it worked like that. I really wish it worked like that. I need my coffee, but I need my guns. So if you see me, you know, swinging around a pole, mind your business.
That would be rough to look at.
Right? You'll pay me to stop.
Now you're using like drill pipe for that pole, right?
I do have some.
And it's ribbed.
For pleasure.
My pleasure, not hers.
No, but you're absolutely right, though. And I see this a lot, especially like I've been like training season is like in full swing now. Part of the training tour. So I'm doing classes all over the place and they are coming hot and heavy. And I'm seeing this in classes. Guys are coming in, you know, girls, whatever. They're coming in and they are on a tight budget and they're looking for that good firearm. Because let's face it, the world is really kind of scary right now.
There are some good ones out there at an economical price.
Yeah, huge. I mean,
really, that was the biggest takeaway from SHOT Show that I saw, is the budget gun is coming into its own. There's high-quality options out there that don't break the bank.
There is.
It's kind of nice to see.
There is. You know, we talked about it before. I've been running that Live Free, that Falcon 9. With a 379 MSRP on it, I've shot the crap out of that thing.
Yeah, and it shoots.
It shoots well.
Right, and what, you got 1,000 rounds in that thing by now?
Probably.
And that's more round count than most guys are going to put through the gun in its lifetime.
Right.
So you've kind of proven it out. It's a quality item for a budget price.
It is. I've been actually nothing but really impressed with it.
And I've... Runs
so you're telling people only $1 a day then?
$1 a day would probably work if you need to get into it.
Yeah.
And go to the gun store. Go to the mom and pop shop. Avoid the big box guys. Sorry, but avoid them. And the guy behind the counter might own the shop. And if he does, he is motivated to make a sale today.
Right.
Business has been off for 18 months.
Yeah.
If not longer for some folks. So they're motivated. So go talk to them. They will steer you in a good direction.
They will. And like we have a local dealer here that has basically, I'm not sure how it works. I think it's a 3-month thing, but it's a layaway and you make equal payments on these deadlines.
Sure.
And so it's not like out of your pocket right away. You budget for it. It's like a bill kind of.
Right. And they set it aside so nobody else can take it. No one's going to buy it out from underneath you. So yeah, go take advantage of those programs that people put in place to help you get into something nice.
I can't do that.
You can't?
I see the shiny. I see the shiny. I want it now.
See, yeah, there it is. There it is. He's an impulse buyer.
I will go adopt all of the guns.
All right. I need to take him shopping.
Yeah, well, I need to
because I will
safe.
Foster some of the ones he doesn't have room for.
You're going to need a bigger safe, buddy.
I have two that are empty.
You're going to need a bigger safe.
All right.
So we kind of got onto this. Like we took this in a little bit different direction. Like we did this the whole sad puppy thing, come adopt me. But where this really got spawned out is some of the marketing practices of gun manufacturers, accessory manufacturers, all of this, using fear to drive sales.
It's not just the manufacturers. You've seen it everywhere these days. The NRA's used it for years. Gun manufacturers have taken it in the past 5 years and made it kind of their hallmark. You know, the sky's falling. You need my gear right now. And they're taking advantage of your impulse complex as well as...
Notice he points directly at you.
Well, yeah, we already defined him as the impulse buyer.
Oh, I got something in my eye.
But they're taking advantage of it, and he pulls that middle finger out of his eye just for a second, and he's going to self-reflect and realize I'm right. I know it pains him for me to say
you're
that
absolutely right, and it doesn't pain me one bit.
Right.
Now, it may pay in the pocket a little bit. But
they market to women, not because they're trying to build a segment of the marketplace that actually belongs here, but they're doing it out of fear.
They do.
And they need to stop.
And it does. It makes me nuts. And that was one of the reasons I settled on the motto that my company has, and that is empowerment.
Correct.
Not fear. Like, let's be empowered to be, you know, all right, forward thinking a little bit, and I'm going to set myself up to be my own first responder.
Right, right. And we've talked about it several times. Anybody that's heard us more than once have heard that if you can only afford a High Point, get one.
Right.
They shoot. They do just fine. They're not super sexy. They're kind of big and clunky, but they go bang.
You know what? My only gripe about a High Point is that it doesn't have a slide lock.
Okay.
That's my only gripe.
And is that a make or break feature, though?
No. And no. Especially when if somebody is on a really tight budget, but they know, like, they need this protection. Maybe they live in the south side of Chicago, or they live in the, you know, bad part of Indianapolis. I heard about this weekend. But get what you can get. You can always upgrade later.
Correct. But stop selling fear.
Right.
Get what you can get on your budget, regardless of whether you're punching holes in paper or going to start becoming an everyday carry. But get what you can get.
But that comes back to us as a community, too. We've got to stop making fun of people for their purchase decisions.
I don't know that that'll ever happen.
Well, it won't. But the thing about it is if somebody is making a purchase that you and I wouldn't, okay, because I'm a gun snob or whatever, like, if you're a mall ninja, I'm sorry, fuck you.
Hey, stop. Now, hold on a second. Thank God for the Mall Ninja. They buy a lot of gear they don't need, and they do it in redundancy.
Agreed. But the thing about it is when the Mall Ninja gets on social media and berates somebody because they didn't buy a freaking Staccato because they went and bought a Glock because that was what was in their budget. Fuck you.
Well, that's just an asshole. It doesn't be a
right.
Mall Ninja to be that.
Right. But stop it. Because if somebody can sit there and articulate to me, hey, I got this High Point, or I got this, what's the one out of Florida?
The Live Free.
Yeah, okay. You know, I bought this because it was in my budget, but you know what? It goes bang every time. And they used the money that they saved, because they didn't go buy that $3,000 Staccato, to buy ammo and go to a class and get educated.
That's money well spent.
I would rather go and deal with that person and help them in every way I possibly could than the guy that went and dropped the money on the Staccato but only put 50 rounds through it.
Correct.
Don't know. If you go down to Rocky Mountain Discount right now and buy the pink glitter gun, I'm going to make fun of you.
Only because the glitter comes off.
That's funny.
Oh, that's sad.
Yeah, Richard can't take one out and shoot it without his wife getting angry now.
He's all sparkly.
I would go shoot it.
I don't know.
I'd care.
Shoot the heck out of it. But
and I think they're marketing more on what matches what purse for the day. So here's a bad thing. So first, I'm not a big concealed carry purse fan. You know, you're going to beat them over the head with it before you get it out of the purse. Regardless, they're now selling these things to match your purse. They have the cow print gun and the pink sparkly gun and the galactic June bug and the teal guns.
Hey,
and
look, Springfield, as an April Fool's joke, came out with the Hell Cow. And it was the Hellcat, but it was in a cow print. I would have bought that. I would have so rocked that.
They have
that
a
thing.
Cow print one down at Rocky Mountain.
I did,
but
it's
I don't know what it is.
It's not the Hellcow. I don't know what it is.
That was a Sky.
It was a Sky. That's the one I was thinking of. It was a Sky. There's nothing wrong with a lot of these guns. There's absolutely nothing wrong with it. Now, what bothers me,
concealing bright colors might be tough, but you know, it's all right.
It's supposed to be concealed. You don't see it anyway.
Have you seen what we wear?
Yes, I do.
No, they've marketing the wrong direction to try and get that impulse buy, right? It's a fine pistol without it being embellished in a garish color.
Well, but okay, so here's my issue with it. They take, and it's a lot of these pocket pistols, these super compact 9mm, and those are the ones that they're making in the pink and the purple, and they're marketing directly to women. But what they don't tell you is that's an expert's gun.
It is an expert's
gun. Because it doesn't have the mass to absorb the recoil. And then these women come to classes with them, and they can't shoot well because it's such a sharp, such a hard recoil. They don't like it.
Well, in a sight radius discussion,
right,
the shorter the barrel, the better you have to have been to make that hit.
Right.
There's a lot of things that have to align. You got to get everything right before you're going to make a hit with a small handgun.
Right. And a lot of these women that are coming to class, this is like the first time they've ever really shot.
So size does matter.
It does.
God damn right it matters. And how you use it. I mean, you got to be able to use what you got.
Right. And this is something to a point that was made in a class that we had a couple weeks ago. We had a couple of students that newer shooters. This is the first time they'd ever been to class. In fact, the one, her very first class ever, first time she'd ever shot. And instead of going and buying a gun and bringing it to class and realizing that it didn't work for her or whatever, she asked us, she's like, hey, can you bring some to let me try? And we had myself and three adjunct instructors there. We brought, I think we had 40 guns there for her to try out. And she got to try all kinds of stuff and settled on like three of them that she really, really liked. And now it comes down to price point and availability.
And she's refined her shopping list and she'll go get something that works for her.
Right.
Now, there is a balance to be struck there if we're going to talk about the size matters thing. Again, the small little snub nose 38, that's not a beginner gun.
No.
Same thing with a Desert Eagle 50. That's not a beginner's gun.
Sure it is. Come on.
No.
I started with that.
Yeah, and I watched three guys try and pick you up off the ground after you shot it, too. No, it's not a beginner's gun. There's a balance to be struck there.
Were they trying to pick me up off the ground or make sure that gun didn't go aiming at anyone special?
Yes.
Yes. Because all of the above.
I was off the ground. So if you're a relatively small female, the Desert Eagle 50, not something to start with. Just point that out.
No, move into something like that.
Right.
Right? Because it does nothing but discourage the shooter. When it's a scary experience, you're taking a step backwards, and you should be going forward.
And that goes exactly to my point of, you know, these super small guns marketed to women. They're not beginner's guns. They're just not. And it goes to your point. Number one, sight radius. You know, you've got to have your kinesthetic alignment right on because you don't get much margin of error with your sights. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It goes back to, like I said, the recoil impulse. When it's a sharp, hard recoil and somebody's just learning, I mean, the first thing we got to do is you got to grip the gun. You got to manage that recoil. And you can't do that with these really tiny guns that don't even fit their hand most of the time.
The next thing that bugs me about marketing, if we're looking at handguns, is the big discussion lately has been round count. We start talking about round count as a selling point on a firearm. You're counting on volume rather than quality of precision.
You are. And the larger the round count, the larger the gun is, and the harder for some of us. Like, I can't conceal a large round count, but I can't take a class with a 7-round gun.
In a lot of circumstances. But there are some new firearms out there that break that rule. The SIG 365, the Hellcat, the relatively small firearm with a large round count.
Mm-hmm.
But you look at full-size frame guns, and some of these are 18, 22 rounds.
Mm-hmm.
You're no longer in a carry pistol.
Right.
You're in a full-size defensive pistol.
It reminds me of the satellite cell phone.
Yeah.
When you carry it, and it's a big old box on your hip.
The bag phone.
I had one of those. They were great, by the way.
No, I agree with you. There is a balance to be struck. And I think the... You know, like the Hellcat, especially like the Hellcat Pro, is a 15-round gun. That's what I carry every day is a Hellcat Pro.
It's plenty concealable.
I don't have any issues with it. And I even got an optic on it.
But in a given situation, if you're proficient with your firearm, right, the standard 8 to 10 rounds mm-hmm. is usually plenty.
Usually. Now, let me caveat that. And this is something that we've been discussing a lot lately. Is emergent threats and the evolving threats that we're facing. One of the things that I've made is kind of almost a fundamental change to when I teach a lot of my pistol classes. We talk about plausibility principle. And we've talked about it here, you know, training for everything that's possible, da, 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 down to what is most likely. And 10 years ago, what was most likely is 1 to 2 attackers at 9 to 15 feet. That's really not the case anymore. I mean, we're dealing with active shooters. We're dealing with flash mobs that are organized by social media, happen in seconds. Active home invasions are on the rise. You can't necessarily say that 8 rounds is going to be enough anymore.
That's why I have 3 guns in my nightstand.
Yes, you do.
Not a bad plan. And I'm not saying high round count's a problem, but when we start marketing it to first-time shooters,
right,
it's one detail to get lost in the weeds over when you're not proficient with a handgun anyway.
Right. Yeah, let's not worry about that. Let's make you a shooter first.
And at the end of the day, nobody's ever really complained about having more ammunition, right? And if there's lead in the air, there's a chance.
Yes.
So with all those both being true, round count's not necessarily a bad thing. I don't like it being marketed as a you must have for a new shooter.
No, I totally agree. I will caveat this though, that in a class, the guy that shows up with the 1911 that only has 7 rounds, he struggles. Now, if in not necessarily in the shooting part of it, but if you're going to be that guy and go to a class, make sure you have like 10 magazines on you.
I will also offer, as a guy that started the 1911 world, that my reloads are more refined than most.
Agreed.
Because I've had to do it a lot.
Yeah.
It's a skill you build.
It is a skill you build, but, and this is a big but, viewing thousands of videos of actual fights, okay, in, I would say probably 1,500 to 2,000 that I've watched, I've seen one reload, ever.
I think it's one of those things we forget that you can do, carry an extra mag,
mm-hmm.
And when you run it dry, you're looking for something else to shoot.
Right.
And now when you're concealed carry and you're going shopping and stuff, one isn't carrying a battle belt with like 9 magazines on it. So maybe round count is sort of important for certain outings, like your store.
Once you develop your skills, I agree. As a first-time shooter, I'm not necessarily sure that that's a checkbox you got to have.
No. And like I said, I think there's a balance to be struck. And some of these subcompacts, you know, you mentioned the 365, the Hellcat, you know, you're looking at 12 to 15 round guns that are very easily concealable.
They are. And again, short barrel, mm-hmm. And you have to be on your game to manage them. You do. So again, it's not necessarily a beginner's gun, right? Get a full-size frame in your hand. Get proficient with grip, get proficient with stance, get proficient with sight alignment, and go on from there. They make guns all the time. Buy another one later.
Right.
Back to all guns need more help.
I was gonna say, you can always trade in. They're a lot like cars. They hold value. You can trade them in for other guns. Although, if you're like me, you get attached. And so the first time I traded one in, I missed that gun.
You cried for 3 weeks.
I did.
That was your Walther?
Yes, yeah, which I have another one now.
I had to buy another rifle. Oh, not rifle, but I had to buy another Walther just to get her to stop crying. Because I advocated she got into that one because it taught some mechanics discipline. It's a hammered pistol.
Mm-hmm.
It
mm-hmm.
has multiple safeties. Mm-hmm. So there's some peace of mind there. But it also came with you got to be able to manipulate all those safeties. It's a good fitting gun. It's a small gun. It was chambered in 380.
Right.
Which, there's nothing wrong with that caliber whatsoever.
Absolutely not.
And at the end of the day, it was a great beginner gun because it taught you some disciplines. You learned what you liked and what you didn't like. And then you went to what? An HK VP9?
Yeah, I think that was my next one, which works out because the mag release is in the same spot. For correct. All of you who don't know that.
Correct.
Yeah.
But you learned that you didn't necessarily need the hammer and all the complexity of the other safeties. And you don't miss with that gun. Out of the box, that gun was probably the most accurate situation you've been in a while.
And let me throw something else out with that gun in particular. You had an extreme bias against HK because the first thing you had shot was a USP.
Dude, if I pull a trigger, okay, and I have time to make a bologna sandwich, have lunch, and a cup of coffee before the thing goes off, you know, when I want to shoot it, if I need to shoot it, it needs to be now,
right,
not next week. Well, so, yeah, I had a hard time with that.
And you did.
USB is a completely different platform. And
yeah,
that's
I don't
why.
Like it.
Well, and it was an older design. Correct. It was the double single action. It's kind of the little brother to the Mark One.
It's a hammered pistol.
Yep. So and when you got to that VP9, which is a striker fired, not, you know, at the time, I don't think you correlated the difference. But once I let you pull the trigger on that thing, you went, oh yeah.
It was a big difference, and if you'd like to bring up the entire story, it matched the AR I was getting for that Christmas anyway. So I made you buy both. So good for you.
Yeah,
it was pretty.
It still is.
Still pretty. You haven't shot it enough, evidently, because no carbon marks or no holster wear.
He carries not my VP9. My VP9's usually in my car or my nightstand with me, but he carries my carbine more than I do.
Awesome.
Well, hey, it's pretty.
And it runs like a raped ape,
oh,
though.
God, it does.
I mean,
and this was the gun that we were sitting on the bench, and she was clanging 6-inch steel at a grand with a 5.56.
That's correct. With a 1-6 optic on top.
The flapper in the middle.
Yes.
Put the flapper in the middle that you couldn't hit.
I was hitting the damn target. It was a man-sized target. I just couldn't get the damn heart shot. And your whole theory is you just hold it in the same place every time. Well, that'd be great, but I got to find the sweet spot first.
Plugging holes should be your thing.
I can plug holes.
Damn, she went right there, y'all. I love this crew.
No, and that goes to something else that I've been pushing hard. That, you know, we talk about responsible gun ownership and carrying and this and any other. And something that I'm starting to push really hard is, look, if you're going to carry a gun every day, I think that, you know, your first gun, your first class needs to be that gun class, right? Your next class, and it should be a very soon follow-up, is a medical class, because I think as responsible gun owners in this day and age, with the resources that we have available, if you are not at least carrying a tourniquet, I think it's kind of an irresponsible thing.
Well, Michael Bain got it right. If you're carrying a gun, you're accepting the fact that somebody may get shot.
Right.
We don't discern which that somebody is, because luck has a way of discerning that for you, but
could be you, could be your family, correct, could be anybody. And then, if correct me if I'm wrong, in some states, you shoot someone who breaks into your house, some states require you to give first aid to the person you shot.
No, that's not a thing anymore.
Not all, and there's not states out there still like that.
Did they finally wash that all out?
They finally got that all hashed out. And this is something that we talked about at length in one of the classes that we did is look, if somebody breaks into your house and you shoot them, okay, and you decide because of some moral clarity that you have that you need to save their life, you are now, you know, getting rid of your firearm or whatever and going hands-on with the person that just tried to kill you. And how many instances have we read and seen and talked about and heard about of people being killed by people that were already dead?
A lot. Actually, it's a thing.
And I do not think that you bear responsibility to try to save the life of somebody who just tried to kill you.
And that's probably a valid point, but there's two very distinct camps in that whole medical discussion, right? And you're one that has the empathy and one that, fuck you, you just tried to kill me.
Well,
you're done.
But let's look at it from a legal application.
Mm-hmm.
Once you start to administer aid, you are now responsible for it.
And I'm in your camp. I'm just playing devil's advocate.
No, I agree.
I totally agree with you. But there are some people out there that are going to have the empathy for the guy laying on the ground yelling.
I totally understand that. But I think you put yourself in more legal jeopardy by trying to help them than you would to just leave them lay.
I would agree with you.
And I for safety's sake, I'm not going to go hands-on with somebody who just tried to kill me.
No, there's better things you can be doing with your time, like getting 911 called.
Right.
Trying to get help from a situation that has gone horribly wrong.
Right.
Because let's face it, you end up in a gunfight, there's a couple tactical errors you've made.
Well, maybe. I mean, we're, you know, in this instance, we're talking home invasion. You right. didn't do anything wrong. The guy busted through your front door.
Fair enough. Fair enough. You should have built a better front door.
Well, I mean.
Bought that Rottweiler. There are things, right?
No, I totally agree with you. But, you know, some people are very determined, and the ATF is well known for shooting the dog.
Oh, God. That would actually make me fight harder than anything else. Don't shoot my dog.
Yeah, right?
I might let you run away if you hadn't shot my dog.
Okay, John Wick.
So seriously, you shoot my dog, you're done. I'm going to bury a hole in my backyard, and I will help people look for you. Don't shoot my dog.
Well, I mean, your theory on it is, hey, nobody else knows you're here.
Right. Well, I live out of town. He technically lives in county, but, you know, golf course is kind of a town of its own.
Yeah, but he has a cannon.
2 minutes. There's 42 minutes from the time I call the sheriff's office to where somebody's going to roll into my front yard. I have time.
We have the same amount of time, which sucks for you because that means they're responding faster because they have 20 miles to get out here.
Yeah. You know, the advantage we have, though, is our neighbors are used to gunfire coming from our property. Like, they're not going to think anything of it.
The problem is they go, hey, what'd you shoot?
Right.
If I say nothing, they'd be like, oh.
You say, no, you say I shot a coyote.
Right.
Oh, carry on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know, some of my neighbors would be like, cool, can I touch it?
That is the problem.
Yeah, no, don't come see. We're not going to put it on parade like that guy in Daniel.
Oh, my God. What a...
All right, so there's a whole moral, legal dilemma around that thing. Cause everybody out there has heard about this guy who ran over a wolf, it was a pup, with a snowmobile, didn't kill it, he grabbed onto it, taped his mouth shut and took it on parade, took it to the bar, tortured
See,
this damn thing.
Not everybody heard the same story because I was just talking to my brother last week. And he said that he had heard that he had killed it and then took it to the bar. And I'm like, no, that's not the case.
No, because there's video of it, of him torturing this thing in the bar.
Yeah, no. He's in trouble because he kept it.
Right.
Had he shot it and said, hey, everybody, I got a wolf on the back of my truck. Come take a look. Everybody had been cool with it. He wouldn't. There had been no fines. No, he kept it and tortured it. All right. Yeah. Animal cruelty doesn't apply. It's not a domestic animal or livestock.
But no, okay, fine. Legally, maybe not.
Correct.
But,
There's not much they can do to him.
Morally, that's wrong.
I'm sorry. I want to string the guy up.
Evil's evil. I get it.
I know.
He did wrong.
Wolves are predators, and they do go after our livestock and whatever. However,
I'm not going to do that to a wolf.
I hunt.
I'm not going to do that to anything.
And if I don't kill them in my first shot, I feel morally wrong about what I did.
You've never done that. I've been with you on pretty much all of your hunts. You end it right now.
It's just, it's a moral thing. You don't torture them. You don't
Correct.
Shoot one leg off at a time. It's just, it's wrong.
But that's where there's a disconnect, and there's a whole bunch of folks out there that have the empathy for the wolf, and there's a whole bunch of folks out there that, well, it was a predator, you know what, whatever. He did wrong by keeping it.
I don't see where there's a disconnect, because even those that are like, yes, it's a predator, it's a problem, we need to thin these things out at best, you know, at worst, and eliminate them at best, because they are an invasive species. They're not native.
Correct.
That they reintroduced, and you can have your issues there, but still feel empathy for the animal over what the guy did.
Sure, and I'm not arguing that at all. I'm saying from a legal perspective, and an actual pragmatic perspective, there's not a whole lot legally they can do to him about it.
Well, yeah, I agreed, and I think that alone is what's got people so upset.
Well, but I don't want them changing rules either.
Oh, I don't.
I don't want them changing rules, but I think torture's torture.
Agreed.
No matter what the animal is torture.
But let me just shed real light on where this is headed. And I spent the weekend with a game and fish commissioner, and we had a long talk about this. He is really concerned about the coming legislation because of this in the torture realm, right? So an archery hunter, you make a questionable shot, and that animal runs. By all legal definition of torture, you just inflicted a mortal wound on something that's going to die slowly. That's torture, right? So that questionable shot, rifle or archery for that matter, now becomes an actionable item under the law. And I think that's wrong.
Agreed.
I think it's wrong for a guy to keep an animal and do this
but
to him on an intentional.
It's torture. Yeah, it's torture with intent, not
right.
once. Okay,
malice.
So you make a bad
yes.
shot and you track the animal and you end it, whatever. That is not wrong. Taping its mouth shut and dragging it behind you mm-hmm. to a public place to torture it to death in public, that's wrong.
I completely agree.
Have you ever grabbed your elk and drug it to town to torture it in
no.
public? See?
No, that's not what we do. But we also have ethics. This gentleman didn't have any.
So I think there can be rules that bad shots happen, something moved, the wind picked up, whatever. It's the act of dragging it somewhere and holding it and literally torturing it.
Well, and that's where we find ourselves in the quandary. Where do you make a adjustment to the already existing rules and laws to cover that?
I don't think there needs to be an adjustment. I think that we need to allow some kind of judicial discretion in this matter.
I would agree with you, but he's not being
tried. Don't get government power.
He's not being tried in a legal court anymore. He's being tried in the public opinion court, which I think is going to give him his just deserve at the end of the day.
I think you're right.
But if the legislators take this and use it as a catalyst.
And you know they will.
Yes. To introduce new legislation that's going to screw the rest of us, I think that's wrong.
I totally agree. And that's where you get into, like I said, judicial discretion, because there's enough to put this guy in front of a judge. And looking at the actual circumstances of what happened, I think some discretion by that judge could give an apt punishment without endangering the rest of us, right? But the problem is that when you start allowing judicial discretion, then we start getting into the problems of, let's say, the George Floyd rioters.
You still have to have a penal code to be able to prosecute him in front of a judge, which means there has to be a law.
Right.
That is the quandary.
Well, I think, you know, capturing an animal like that, because it's already illegal to possess an animal. It's already illegal to possess a wolf.
And it's a $250
right?
fine.
Right.
That's not enough for what he did. It's not.
What about on the federal level?
Well, on a federal level, it can be construed as a felony.
Right.
But it's going to be jurisdictional. See, he shot this, well, didn't shoot it. He ran it over and did this outside the boundary of the park where this animal is classified as a predator. So therein lies the gray area.
Well, in gray area or not, it's still, it is federally illegal to possess a wolf. It's illegal to possess any of these wild animals.
Agreed. But there's no mechanism from a legal perspective to prosecute him. There's not. And I'm advocating that there shouldn't be.
No,
because then that's going to bleed into a bunch of other things that is unintended consequences.
Agreed.
So the quandary, that's what we're talking about.
But let's talk about his mental status, okay? So a lot of times, your serial killers and everything, they start out with torture of animals, and they move up from there. He just decided to display his publicly, which means he's sick in the head.
Correct. And the serial killers we're talking about typically do this with livestock or pets. And there is animal cruelty, felonies on that level. But that animal that he was working with, the wolf in this instance, is not classified that direction. So, back to the quandary.
So
right?
Does that make him sick enough that he knew that he could take it and torture it like this because there's nothing we can do to him?
I wouldn't give him the credit of having that much of a Mensa member intellect on the deal. I think that he thought, hey, this is kind of cool. I've got a wolf. And he went and did stupid shit. He borders on an evil mindset, in my opinion. But from prosecution side, legally, there's not a lot they can do about it unless they push it federally.
I think they had to make him a mental problem.
Well, and that very well may be the solution here.
Because torturing anything is nasty.
Right. But the knee-jerk reaction from the legislators that we're talking about here is going to be, we need more laws.
Right.
And I'm completely against that. I think something should be done with this guy, and I don't necessarily think it should be on books. And you can read between the lines there, right? And I'm dead serious. I think that should happen.
I don't disagree.
And what about all those fuckers that were watching this happen and no one ever called anybody?
Right.
They are accessories after the fact.
Mm-hmm.
An entire bar. Now, okay, so it's Daniel, Wyoming. There's probably seven people there. However, doesn't that make them all a little mentally sick?
It does. And I think that there needs to be some consequences to the bar itself for allowing this to go on.
And socially and in business, there has been. Again, the court of public opinion is trying this case, and those folks that did this are horrifically suffering those consequences now.
As they should.
Agreed. My worry is the anti-gun, the anti-hunting, they're going to take this and run with it.
Oh, they are.
And we're already seeing legislation being proposed because of this. So it was a horrible, evil act. But if you think it doesn't have consequences to your deer or elk hunting later, it will.
I'm just going to say right now, I'm kind of a sick motherfucker too. Bring him to me. I'll show him what torture's like.
And back to the punishment should fit the crime. I agree with you. It just can't be cruel and unusual, lady.
Oh.
I know.
She doesn't know anything else.
So, we digressed completely.
Oh, God, we so off.
Went down
the
a rabbit hole. It's yep. My fault. My bad.
No, but it's all good.
At the end of the day, it's a contemporary topic that needs addressed.
Mm-hmm. Nope. I totally
agree. We started
agree.
With the song. We can throw puppies in there.
Your song was actually appropriate to what we're talking about, because you're going to see the animal rights activists come out of the woodwork with that song. And they're going to charge somebody $9 a day for saving the wolf.
Which is way more expensive, ladies and gentlemen, than the firearm that's lonely.
I can buy
afraid.
A kid in Africa for 38 cents.
Okay,
you
there's
did
not
that.
Much to them. They're kind of thin.
Okay, we don't like publicize the fact that I did that, so shush.
You adopted?
Adopted a lion, not a child.
I know, but you adopted an African child.
It was a lion.
I know it was, but it was still an African child.
He's kind of got you there.
Just because I told you couldn't bring one home.
Well, evidently, there's no statutes in Wyoming against having lions.
Yeah, we found that out. Yeah.
Because they didn't think anybody would bring one in.
Hold my beer. Watch this.
No, I'm not going to hold your beer because I know where you'll keep it. No.
Aw.
You think there's no room in the bed now.
Oh, my God. Well, I just fixed the damn fence. I'm not, no.
And I'm allergic to cats, so you're on your own, pal.
Here, kitty, kitty.
Yeah, right. No, that's, you are. You are going to die trying to pet something.
Well, I almost died being funny last time we were in Africa. I found a photo of a lion holding onto some camera equipment.
Oh, yeah.
And I posted out there to socials and asked if anybody had seen Brandy, because she was my camera person on that trip. Her mother lit my phone up. It was not polite or nice.
I remember that. That was fun.
Yikes.
So, to bring this back around.
All right.
I mean,
that's a hell of a U-turn,
oh
but
God,
okay.
Yeah, right? Siri just totally took us on a... what is it? When you find yourself in the shadow of the valley of death, to understand that Google Maps is not always correct?
I fear no evil except Google Maps.
Right. Or Deer Shooter. Like, we could, wow.
Yeah, it went right there.
But I think what we really are trying to hammer home here is there are affordable options if you're trying to get into a firearm. And
there's good decisions to be made, too. So talk to an instructor.
Right.
Talk to the guy at the gun counter and recognize the guy at the gun counter. He's a victim of a SPIF program. He's going to try and sell you whatever lines his pocket one way or another.
Well, and not only that, but what I'm seeing a lot, especially when you start going to the big box people, it's whoever is there to fill the hole. Like, I find people at the gun counter, they've never shot a gun. They've never held a gun. They're just, they're that 19-year-old minimum wage employee, and that's the job they got that day.
I will also offer, not every option that's available to you is at a big box store.
No.
Some of the mom and pop gun stores are going to have things that aren't going to be represented in a Cabela's or a Bass Pro.
Totally agreed.
So your better options for somebody that's going to talk to you and help you, maybe even a position of knowledge, is that mom and pop gun store.
And the mom and pop gun store, not only to mention the big boxes don't typically do this, but the mom and pop is going to have those consignments so you can get the higher level gun, but it's been used, so it doesn't have the brand new price tag.
Damn good point. Yep.
Well, here's another one. The mom and pop, the smaller shops, you buy a gun from them and you experience a problem. You go out and you shoot it. You have an issue. You can take it back to them and 9 times out of 10, they're going to help you. Where the big box store, they're going to go, oh, send it back to the manufacturer.
We can't they're do not there to help you with much.
No. But I mean, that mom and pop, he might go, oh, hey, I got a gunsmith buddy of mine that he can fix that.
And he probably can.
Yeah, he'll probably take you out back to his little shooting range and figure it out.
Yeah.
Just because they're more family-oriented than the big box.
I agreed. 100%. So shop around and don't necessarily fall into the big box mindset. There are other options, and there are sometimes better options. And I haven't even thought about the used option you just brought up.
Mm-hmm.
There are some excellent values out there in a gun that's been loved for a couple hundred rounds.
Mm-hmm.
It's worth looking.
And it is. And typically where you're going to see those is somebody bought something and then they went to a class or they got with somebody who understood guns a little bit and showed them some things and they realized that wasn't the gun for them. And now you've got, like you said, you've got a gun that's got 200 rounds in it. That's barely break in.
Right.
And it's $200 less than to go buy the same gun brand new.
Correct.
So look around, find some options, get somebody who knows what they're talking about when you are starting to ask questions. Don't ask on Facebook.
No, you'll get all kinds of weird opinions on Facebook. The typer snipers, the internet trolls, they know everything and they at the same time know nothing.
Right.
Because they're reading marketing information.
Well, and I will tell you this, again, we go back to Michael Bain. He made this point absolutely succinctly, but the guys who really know aren't on social media.
This is true. A few of them are, but for the most part, you're going to find a guy that is going to be a gear whore, and he is going to trash your decision.
Mm-hmm.
Has no idea of your circumstances or your special situation. And everybody has one, right? And he's going to trash you on nothing.
Right.
So the internet's not necessarily the best place for information. We see the proliferation of reviews on products.
10 best.
Yeah. At the end of the day, the internet's given a voice to folks that shouldn't have one. Yes, I said it out loud.
No, I totally agree. Totally agree. So I guess at the end of the day, educate yourself a little bit before you go drop several hundred dollars on something that, it should last you your life. And
if you really just want to know an opinion that is born out of actual handling, call Jason Crotto.
Oh, God, no.
Yes.
No, because you're going to end up in a 3-hour conversation.
Well, at least you're going to get some information.
You'll get some information, but make sure you clear your calendar before you make that call. And if you do make that call, just end up blaming whatever gun I tell you to buy.